Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to all on this April 27th, 2021. Well, the month is almost gone, just a few more days and it's over with. But we're grateful yet again that everyone who will join us and is joining us tonight. Talk Straight, this is your host, Reverend Dockery. Grateful to have each and one of you again. It's open mic. It's open mic night. And we welcome you to share your thoughts with us. We will do our level best to respond accordingly, right? Typically, we have a topic or theme for our episodes, but occasionally we have open mic. Well, we yield the floor to you, our listening audience. If you follow us on Facebook, feel free to give us a call. I'd like to hear from you. 657-383-0944. That is the number to the podcast studio. Okay, I'd love to hear from you. 657-383-0944. Be great to engage in you in dialogue here. And because I didn't bring a particular theme tonight, certainly want you to know that we are open to your conversation. All we ask is that we show respect and courtesy to one another. But quite often we have different differing opinions, including mine. But we strive to bring factual information and to establish a basis for our statements and or our claims. All right? With that being said, we welcome you to join us here on Talk Straight. It's open mic. Open mic. We're going to have a guest coming on this coming Thursday, April the 29th, Ms. Lenice Campbell, who is a health educator, and she's going to be talking with us about kidneys, your kidneys, the importance of them, but more importantly, our actions and how they impact or affect our kidneys. Okay? Make plans to join us there. And I'd love to have you pose questions to her. I understand she's going to bring one of her colleagues with her to speak, and it'll be an informative show, but there'll be an opportunity for you to pose questions, perhaps share and engage in dialogue there. You listen to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. And again, we're grateful for each and every one of you who perhaps are following us on Facebook Live or on the podcast platform. That would be blogtalkradio.com/EFC Institute, which brings us to a great another point here. For the last 105 years now, we've had a good number of people who are members of the group who from time to time share with us, post, and follow us. And we want you to, if you will, let me allow the late, great Bobby Blue Band to tell you what I want to tell the members of the group. It's for the membership. This is for the membership. And if you want to become a member, you can do that. You can do that. Simply go to our Facebook page there and strive to join the group. Bobby Blue Band said it best. Listen to what he said.
Last time I've been kind of frustrated, but I'm beginning to learn what really is going on.
Okay.
And
okay.
As I'm talking right now, my phone done started jumping.
Uh-oh.
And I really done, I'm learning what's really going on.
Okay. Well, yeah.
All right. I heard Senator Thelma Harper passed away. And I brought up on the radio station down here, Mr. Dockery, about that. And I was going to say to you, that seat that Senator Harper sat in, we know Sister Brenda Gilmore sat in it. And previous before Thelma, we had Avon Williams.
That's correct. In fact, he was the first senator for that senatorial district after it was carved out in 1967 or 69, one of those 2 years. That's correct. Right. Right. So, Don, you there? Let's see. Hold on. I think we got you here.
Avon Williams and Adam Clayton Powell is gone. And we got a generation now of mothers that let the boys do what they want to do.
Hmm. Where are the fathers to raise the boys to be men? Let's talk about that. How important is it, Don, for fathers to be in boys' lives in order for them to have the best
Mr. Dockery, it's strange you brought that up. My oldest son, he's 35. He's never been in my care. He listened to his mother, but he never was in my care. My daughter talked to him because I went to see my daughter, and she wanted to talk to Stephen. Stephen was very rude to his sister. Because he's going on false information that his mother gave him. And Mr. Dockery, the females that are in our community of our national origin likes to be in control like some of the good old boys.
Well.
And it goes back to the beginning. You know, I learned in Chicago with my dad. He told me once, he said, now when you go down to downtown Chicago, get your voter registration card. He said, now, when you go down there, don't get into it with the women. If you have a problem, go see Mr. Diarco. So I did go see Mr. Diarco. He was the chairman of the Central Committee at that time. And it was a guy next to him, and he made a statement, and it baffled me. And he said, did your dad ever tell you or tell you anything So it baffled me. So I went back home and talked to my dad about it, to the Bible. And he showed me where Satan asked Eve a question, which I never paid any attention to. And that's psychology is still going on in our women's head today. They don't understand that Satan asked the question.
Okay. So, Don, what I'm hearing from you is the fact that there are some there's a breakdown in communication and perhaps in trust, right? And roles between men. Is that right? Is that what I'm hearing from you? Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, sir. And I see it clear now because, you know, I got my baby's mother here. And guess what done happened down here at St. James that Congressman Benjamin Turner used to manage? The good old boys went and got up all the sisters and had them in the St. James. So my wife was working down there, which I didn't know she was working down there. And I go down there to get me something to eat and
you there? Okay, look like we may have lost him a little bit. He made an interesting point. Hopefully he'll be able to get back with us there. Okay, look like there we go. We got him now. All right, we got you back now, Don.
Yeah, what's going on? Like I said, they're listening because it goes back to that point with, like I said, Satan with that question mark. And what I done found out in the St. James is the good old boys want to talk to the sisters, but they don't want you to. And I noticed that all my life. I noticed that even in Tennessee, Mr. Dockery. I had a cousin lived in Cumberland Furnace, and his dad told me some of the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So this psychology goes on all the time.
Well, now, I was I hear what you're saying. I was going to say how important it is. You know how Joshua, biblical character, disclaimed that he was going to speak for he and his household. That was his wife and his children. I think we can bring that back, Don, where men... Now, I don't mean just a male, Don, that's got a pair of britches on and have male biological features. But I'm talking about righteous men before Elohim. You understand what I'm saying? Their women don't mind. In fact, they're happy to work with them and make man. Somebody posed a question. They made a motion, Don, make man, and then someone seconded the motion. Are you with me? And the question today is...
Yeah, I'm very much with you. And can I tell you something, Mr. Doug? You're hitting it right here on the nail. The females don't know how to make man an image. Like, they never was taught.
So do the male? It looks like brother.
Majority of them don't know nothing about it, Mr. Dockery.
Now, see.
And when I say that, Mr. Dockery, let me say something to you. I'm going to throw this in. I'm in the Moorish Divine National Movement. And I'm the only male here that's the point person for that. And you know what's hard to get the brothers to do? To come together and study on something that's real of substance.
I think I know why, Don. Let me say it like this. I have a theory why that is. And that is because through a process of socialization, many of us have been distracted, Don. We talked about this before. We've been preoccupied with things that are insignificant to our personal growth, development, forward progress. We have a tendency to drift off, man. It feels so good. And it looks so good, right? And it makes us drift off from what's important. See what I mean, Don? And I don't mean that as a put down, as a knockdown, but it's just something to think about. But to your point, I've learned that before we get too upset with our sisters, we should really ask ourselves, what have we done to contribute to their frustration, to their fear, to the shame. Now, I would argue, Don, go back to your text in Genesis. I would argue that if Adam was on the job about the business, it would have been impossible for the serpent to whisper anything in her ear. You know why? Because he'd had to come through him. Are you walking with me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, but we have to, it is a challenge, particularly in the context of the Western philosophy. and culture, right? A lot of these things that you're making reference to tend to be more Eastern culturally associated themes or thoughts or ideas. But we live in the Western Hemisphere, and it's a little bit different, especially in 2021 when advertisers done, you know what I mean, businesses and sponsors, they invest money in planting the seed of thought that men and women should be competing with one another. Now, what about that, man? What about that? Think about that,
though. Mr. Darker, you hit another head on the nail. I know what you're saying is correct. I'm gonna say this. I got another brother I studied with, who brought the standpoint on what the true worship day was. He brought it to me because he's a Seventh Day Adventist Saturday, and when he brought that thought process to me, I wasn't conscious of it. I was conscious of Genesis and the diet and the health and what Adam shouldn't have ate. But when he brought that thought process of the Sabbath, and I listen, last night it resonated with me last night, Mr. Doctor, right here in this bed, that we are so thrown off, like you say, about Western culture, you know, the Gregorian calendar year. And it was just marinating in my spirit last night, and it had me just really thinking how we've been thrown so off balance.
Sure.
It just, I won't tell you, it bothered me all night thinking about it.
So the only thing that I would think we need to concern ourselves with is getting back on balance. I agree with you that there is a major rift, and there are many instigations in relationships, particularly for Afro-American families. You know, all we have to do is look at the literature and the research on, and we can trace back the last 40-some, almost 50 years, when and how. In fact, it's almost 50 years now when this concerted effort, part government, part business industry, you understand, part of social organizations and groups and movements, various movements, feminist movements and things of that nature, those efforts combined have led to particularly the demise of the Afro-American family. I turn to Andrew Billingsley and Carol McAdoo as some excellent authors who wrote about it. You understand what I'm saying? And we see in 2021,
yes,
big major breakdown. No love, no trust. You know, Bobby Blue Band said, ain't no love for the heart of the city, son. Ain't no love in this heart of mine. Ain't that something, man? But the good news is, we have an opportunity. You and I have been blessed to be alive and to know what we know, right? And there's an opportunity for us to do some of that information. I would like to see, regardless of what your ethnicity is, truth don't know no color, don't know no race. You understand what I'm saying? I would like to see people learn to walk in that truth. The Savior said, you shall know the truth, and it'll make you free. I like that. So you listen to talk.
And Mr. Dockery, I love what you just said about, as being around my father, and he was involved in Dr. King and the movement, I never heard the term until I met this sister who was the legal secretary to, he's now the probate judge, Nunn. He was the city attorney, and I would go down there and sit with Cookie. Her name is Cookie Jones. And I would just talk, I wouldn't say that. I said, these punks, these faggots. And she looked at me and said, no, Don, Caligula. I said, Caligula? So I went and looked it up. And we don't know, our people never was taught about Caligula, the Roman emperor. We wasn't taught that. So like you said, on Western culture, we don't really know anything about it.
Here's the tricky thing, though, big brother. We live in the Western Hemisphere, in the United States of America, right? How is it that we maintain the integrity of our identity and whatever cultural affinity that you might have, but at the same time, you maintain yourself in the scheme of society? Because this is where we live. And most people will never leave the United States. You understand what I'm saying? They will never leave the border.
Sure.
They may do that. Shoot, I don't know. I may be gone tomorrow, and then everybody jump up and leave. I'm just saying that's my point, that historically that's just been the case. In fact, there's some people, Don, who never left the neighborhood that they grew up in all of their life. They died never leaving their geographic location. And perhaps that's something that individuals can strive and work toward is doing that. So, you listen to Talk Straight, 657-383-0944. Feel free to give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. It's open mic, so you can tell us what's on your mind. You can tell us what's on your mind today, and we can go from there. So, Don, you were talking about the late Thelma Hopper, and you know I had an opportunity to talk with her directly and at length, basically, because I ran for the 19th senatorial district that she once served in. In fact, the year that she was retiring, I was on the ballot. And I wanted to understand from her, you know what I mean? What did she find to be a tremendous challenge? You know what she said to me, Don?
Mm.
She said, we're going to have to wise up, and I'm paraphrasing this a little bit, and learn how to talk to people that don't look like us and do business. That stuck with me, man. So I didn't need to ask her why she said that, because I understand that, you know, Tennessee is a pretty conservative state, and she was really representing the Democratic Party in Davidson County at large. And that's what she was saying, that in order to get anything done, you're going to have to be able to work with other people that have different views or political philosophies. And that made a lot of sense. But now, here's a funny thing. She was voted the the most conservative senator in 2019, I believe it was, 2020. She was voted the most conservative because she went across the aisle and cast a lot of votes that got things done. Rosa Parks Boulevard, I understand, was part of her efforts, you know. A lot of things to support Tennessee State University, right? A lot of cultural icons, Afro-American cultural icons that are here. You know, give her credit where credit is. Of course, you know, she and her husband, Paul Hopper, they helped a lot in hiring and employed a lot of young folks, man, over the years. Can you believe I've been in Nashville 32 years? It'll be 33 years in August. And I've witnessed them do a lot of things for a lot of different people. You got to give them credit for that. Now, having said that, Don, you know me. That's one of the reasons I was running, because there was a lot of things I think, respectfully, we could have done better with her leadership. It didn't happen. It is what it is. But guess what? We're still here in 2021. It's April 27, 2021. What are we going to do? You understand what I'm saying, Don? What are we going
to
do about it?
Mr. Dockery, you know your history teacher. I'm going back to him. We just, you know, he just passed too, Mr. Revis Mitchell.
Dr. Revis Mitchell, that was my advisor, as a matter of fact.
Yes, sir. And I was going to tell you, when I first met him, I didn't know who he was, and I went and visited him at Fisk. And I told him, I said, Mr. Mitchell, my dad got the right to vote idea from Frederick Douglass. And he said, young man, leave out of my office and go out there in front of the men's dorm at Fisk and read the plaque on Samuel McAwee.
And I did that,
Mr. Dockery.
Okay.
And when he opened
out?
My eyes to that, I got fascinated with Reconstruction.
Yes, sir.
So when I came down here with my dad, I got fascinated with Benjamin Turner. And don't you know, right till this day, I fought for at least 5 years to try to get Benjamin Turner's historical marker put up on his home place. Guess what?
Yeah.
It still ain't done to today.
Because the very people that should have and could have made that a reality, you didn't have their support, Don, unfortunately. And that kind of brings us back to where we are all over the country. If African Americans are really going to be able to be productive, collectively speaking now, because there are some very productive people, right? And descendants.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if they identify themselves as African-American, black, or whatever, but there are some very productive people who are commonly referred to as African-American. They are doing what they got to do. So I'm not trying to say that that's a blanket thing, but collectively as a whole, if more of us were unified, I think that we can see things like what you're talking about, that effort you're making reference to, come to fruition. You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But people have got to realize if you don't do it and you're waiting on somebody else, it may not happen. Certainly
it,
not
gonna
like
get, it ain't going to get done. And, Mr. Doctor,
like
you know what's so strange about Mr. Turner? He was the first city councilman. He was the first county tax collector.
Yes.
And it's like we got people here in the city of Selma don't understand spiritual, what you call protocol or principles. It's like you jump in political office just to get your hand on some money. And right now, just like that stimulus money. Yeah, we got the stimulus money. Sure, they got it. All the men in the community got cars now. Old used cars, run them down the road with loud music, you know, right here on Marie Foster, used to be Rain Street. Man, they run up down through here like a racetrack. And you know what's so strange about it, Mr. Dockery? Right across from Reverend Reese, who worked with Dr. King, who invited Dr. King here, him and Miss Boynton, you got Miss West, who kept Dr. King behind Brown Chapel when they was down here doing the right to vote. Her grandchildren sit right out here next on the sidewalk, and these men race up and down the street like it's crazy, man.
Boy.
And they babies walking on the sidewalk, and it's like nobody care. The police don't care.
I hear you.
I don't get it.
I was going to tell you about Benjamin Turner. You know that suffrage, the father of Negro suffrage is Frederick Douglass, right? And about 1868 is when the 14th Amendment was passed, and he kept the fight going and said, listen, we need the ability to elect the people that we want to represent us. And ultimately, by 1870, the 15th Amendment passed, which allowed at least black men to vote. And because of that effort, brothers like Benjamin Turner, Josiah Walls, right, and others were able to go to the United States Congress and become council people, get elected, and represent their own people in respective political districts and what have you. So history is powerful, man, if you use it. We got Pastor Wallon with us here. But, Pastor, it's open mic night, and Brother Don was laying some good information down with us there out of Selma, Alabama. Welcome.
Hey, man. All right. What's going on, Pastor Doctor?
All right. We holding the phone, man.
Brother Don, how you doing?
Don, can you hear him?
Yes, sir.
Okay. He asked how you doing. I don't know if you heard you clearly, Pastor.
Oh, no, I didn't hear him, but how you doing, Pastor Waller?
Hey, I'm all right. Thank you. All right. You're yourself.
I'm doing good. I'm learning. You know, as older you get, the more you learn. You know, you struggle and you get, you know, the radio program, I've been frustrated in the past, but the older you get, you come to stop and realize a lot of things. You know, I'm a grandfather, and I just, I'm learning some stuff now, and it's kind of, you know, the older you get, you know, you slow down. And you got young folk, you begin to look at young folk, how they've been misguided. You know, the older you get, you look at them, man, they done misguided the babies. And then you see your contribution to what you haven't done. So, you know.
Right. Yeah. What do you think about that, Pastor?
I don't have no problem with admitting that the things like that do take place. You know, they say you live and you learn. And experience will teach you. That's one thing I know it will do. And a lot of times, you know, when you look at some things and you think of what you could have done, I'm talking about myself, I should have done, I would love to have done, but it didn't happen. So I had to learn to accept that and then do what I can now. So that's understand that occur, that will happen. So, and see how and what role that I played, how I was able to look at the part that I played in it. You know, had I not done this, this may not have happened, and things like that that will occur.
Yeah.
Or did.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm hearing from you all is that we should always be reflecting on either what we are doing or have done or have not done or should do, right? And that's our own way of checking ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then some of it is like when you have no knowledge, that's understandable because it was without any instructions. See, I know that what I've learned about God is that without instructions, that's the reason why those things took place. Now, if it still takes place with instruction, then that's different.
Yeah.
So the things I have done, it's not like it was what I feel like I ought to have done when I didn't have no knowledge. When I have knowledge now and I don't do certain things, well, that is something totally different. So that's what the living learning come in at, you know. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you all, gentlemen, if you, the three of us, were scooped in the air and made to float around from state to state, Don and Pastor Wallace, and from city to city, especially in urban America. What cities? Say we were in Liberty City, we were over Liberty City in Miami, Florida. We were over Detroit City in Michigan, Florida. We found ourselves flying over Chicago, St. Louis, Don, Indianapolis, Indiana. What if we were in Gary, Indiana? What if we found ourselves flying through Philadelphia, right? Through Baltimore. What do you think? Would y'all want to come down and land in any of those cities? And if so, what would you do when you got there? I know it's a hypothetical question.
You said something real just powerful then. I was a truck driver. So when every time you name those cities, you know, I've been in those locations.
Okay, I got you. So what about it, Don? Would you want to come down at the sky and land in those places? And what contribution would the three of us make if we, you understand what? Pastor, would you want to come down or would you stay up there?
I wouldn't have no knowledge of what I would like to do. I know right now with all that I'm dealing with right now, it's like, man, that would be a tough one for me because I have the instructions to know that where I'm at now, my eyes have opened up and see that I'm still right here. When I had offers to leave, you know, and for some reason, and I can only imagine, I can just take what I've learned is that the part that I did play in this place where I'm at now, being in the shape it's in, I haven't straightened it out yet.
I see. Okay.
That's part of it. I wouldn't know what I would do until I get this straightened out. And then I could have a knowledge of what I would want to come out of there. I'm not as you said.
I got you. You know, Pastor, I was in Chicago for my brother's funeral a couple of weeks ago, and somebody asked me, said, man, would you ever come back? You ever coming back? And I'm kind of like you, Pastor Wallace. I got too much unfinished business right where I am. I don't see. You know what I'm saying? I hadn't even thought about that because we're where we are. To do, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's tough.
It is.
Would you come back? They wanted to know would you come back?
Yeah, we'll come. Be willing. Well, you know, of course. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's what you be willing to come back. I think that's something that. You know, when they asked me that question, you know, I'm sure that had to be a thought you know, about, you know, how long it's been and, you know, what it's like there now. And, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
But, you know, Pastor, if I hadn't been here, I wouldn't have met Brother Don. I wouldn't have met yourself. I wouldn't have known about the good folk down there in Charlotte, Tennessee, Don, Columbia, Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Dixon, Montgomery, Clarksville. Don, I wouldn't have known about none of them. You understand what I'm saying? Memphis, I wouldn't know about none of them people, Don. So I wonder if I would have missed out on something big. You know what I mean, Don? Then, Don, my first experience here, I went down to the War Memorial downtown, you know, where it is downtown. And I looked on the wall, and I saw the name Private First Class John Dockery. What? Private First Class, fault, Don.
First class.
Fault. Private First Class, fault in the Civil War.
Is that something?
And that sparked my curiosity, Don, kind of like you did when you went over to Dr. Mitchell. And as I began to search, I realized that there were some down in Sevier, Tennessee, some down in West Memphis, Arkansas area, Tennessee, down in Mississippi. There was a whole Dockery farm where a lot of the blues singers came out. And so, Don, I learned quite a bit about these. Of course, you know, they were first, the Dockeries were slave owners, and they gave their slaves their name. It drew me to where I came about the last name. But very interesting history. Very interesting history. What are you going to say, Don?
Ms. Dark, you know, I know you went back to Chicago. And guess what? I talked to Jean Cone, and, you know, she kind of got away from it because when we got into a conversation, and she know that I know about Trump. You know, Tower wasn't downtown Chicago when my father ran for Congress. So when you came down to Nashville, you know about Jewtown. Jewtown don't exist now. And I know you went back to Chicago. Malcolm X College ain't where it used to be. Kennedy King is not where it used to be.
Boy, I tell you, Don, they done gentrified the city and run all that out. It's another world, big brother. Another world.
Yes, sir.
Well, and that's kind of like down here where Pastor Wally is. Pastor Wally don't halfway know how to get home no more. He's going to change everything around. Ain't you, Pastor?
That's the intent of it. I'm sure it was to make it have that look. You know,
yeah.
That you're not even at home where you are.
Wow. Wow.
Just
wow.
Lost as you can.
You know right on Fifth Avenue North, Pastor Wall, you know you sit there, right? Right there by the Head Start Center. Right on Fifth, I think, was that street, Taylor Street. You know where you sit there, didn't you? A guy, it was a liquor store that most people felt like that was the biggest distribution center there in the city, one of them anyway. And at one point in time, there was a councilman that owned it, right? Well, I was recently driving through there, and I saw where now it's another place. It's not even that anymore. And it's a respectable burger corner, son.
Right on this corner. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Don, all of that history, man, all of that culture that people would look back to, you understand what I'm saying? How can you even tell your children about what used to happen there? It's gone now, Don. And what context do we teach the babies, son?
Mr. Doctor, when you talk about Nashville, I was raised in Nashville. I used to leave the country and come to Nashville and just hang out. I used to go up there and park behind Oprah Winfrey's daddy's barbershop up there in the park. And I got arrested up there. You know, I got arrested up there, Mr. Doctor. And I think about all of that, you know, at the age I'm at now. And I don't know what it would look like now, me coming home, because I was talking to my cousin the other day. Out there in the country where I live, it's no more country. It's houses everywhere.
What?
So, so, you know, 840 is coming north in Dixon County. It's going to jump over through parts of Montgomery and go over through Robertson to connect all that loop up there because Nashville's expanding out. So yeah. I wouldn't know how to. And when I went home to Chickenell funeral, I'm gonna tell you, you and Pastor Waller, I was real angry. And the reason I was angry, Mr. Dockery, being the oldest son of the man that strategized the Birmingham movement, it felt like to me you throwed me out. You act like I didn't exist. You know, I didn't get to make none of that money. And listen to this, Mr. Dockery. My daughter is a biracial daughter, and she's married to a European male, and they have three children and maybe one on the way. Listen to this, Mr. Dockery. He said he made $120,000 a year. Mr. Dockery, I don't know what that's like. I've never made $120,000 a year. I don't know what that's like. I felt like I've been thrown out like a dog in the weeds, man. You hear me? Just like you were talking about going back to Africa. You know, my dad was a four person for me. He had a passport. He went back. I don't even have a passport. So I feel like I've been thrown out in the dog patch here in the United States. And I can understand why the young men in the gangs are angry. You know what I'm saying?
So you think they share that same frustration and hostility that you're describing, huh?
Mr. Dr. Smith, the other day I goes downtown to the downtowner. I goes in to eat some breakfast. And this pastor, he's from Trinidad. He's a brother. He's sitting in the circle with the good old boys. One of them said, I've been to South Africa. And I was about ready. He don't even know I was about ready to take a plate and bust it over his head.
Oh,
I've never been to South Africa. I seen Wendy Mandela when she came down here across the bridge. And I didn't get to say nothing to her. My dad talked to her chief. You know what I'm saying? So the way I feel, I don't really want to. And listen to this, Ms. Doc. You don't know. You and Pastor Waller don't even know this. I got Elijah Muhammad's baby's last child, Ishmael's mother, her cross of Maltese. I got Minister Farrakhan, his cross. And they might not know it, but I worked with the Unification Church on that. And behind the scenes, I even got my dad his cross of Maltese. Like you said, the cross of Maltese means give you a right of way to go what? East to west. So, like I said, I don't know what it even would feel like to go where my mother's mother homeland is about. You know what I'm saying? It hits me, it hurts me hard.
There are a lot of us who, I think, pastors, I don't want to speak for you, but are there some things you wish you could have had experiences with, Pastor? And at the age you are, have you given up on being able to do that? I know I have. I have my own ideas about, like you, Don, things that I said, man, you know what I mean? But we didn't choose, Don, who our parents were, nor did we have any control of the circumstances under which we grew up in. You follow what I'm saying, Don? And we just got to, you know, play the hand that we dealt. But what do you think about that, Pastor? Anything that you wish you could have done that you say to yourself, well, it's too old. I'm too old now. Forget that.
There are things that's changeable that can be changed, and there are things that one has to learn to accept of what one is unable to change, and that's the real key to life is to know that some things you only have as memories of it, and you know to be able to say I was presently there. I mean, I don't have that. I remember out in a certain location that my grandmother stayed, I just would like to be able to, you know, I can pinpoint it if I wanted to, and that's, I think, that's what I'm saying. So that's a tough one to not know.
Right.
All you can have is the myth of it. And that's just something, sometimes it's just frustrating, you know, to think that you were thrown away, if that's the words that he was using earlier. You wouldn't even fit to even have a thought about this. Don't even think about it. You really don't even belong. That happens a lot, and it's still today it's happening. Now, you know, even in the world, it is definitely, it's been proven that evil is in the world. Thank God for the good. And it's just that way. So it's a tough thing to have to wonder sometimes on a daily basis, basically, you know, do I have a right to do this? Why do I think twice of this? Why do I? All those thoughts could be coming at one when life is so much, it's like they sing a song, they used to sing a little song, this world is your world, this world is my, you know.
And,
you know, in other words, so all of this going on in the world, in the land, and in the neighborhood, in the community, if this is mine, if this is yours, if this is something that is like that, then why do we have to put all these, we got it in right here, but now it's loose over here. You gate it in over here, but you can't come, we can come over here where you are, but you can't come over here where we, you know, where we are.
Right.
Things like that, it's tough. You know, to just say, you stay away from him, but now if we want to come over there where you are, we can do that. Don't you dare come here. That's not a land that's mine. You know, it sounds like it's a song that's hypocritical, you know. And so it can be frustrating to a certain ethnic group of people who should have all rights and privileges, you know, and sometimes it's just something that's instilled in a person or in people that's passed down to them.
Right.
Uprightness is a big thing, you know, to walk according to what uprightness is all about. But when you look around and you be honest with yourself, which is what I have to do, there's evil like that when it seems only like it is done intentionally. It's not that. And I suppose I'm afraid of anybody. I shouldn't have to walk around being afraid, but that is going on. And that is
happening.
And that's something that's not so, it's not so cool, I would say. So it has to be intentional. It has to be utilized and saying, my rights are not like your rights. Your rights is not really actually valid, but mine is. If that is a mentality that's going on, that's a form of evil. But it's happening. It is. Well,
Mr. Dockery.
Okay, go ahead, Don. I'm sorry. Were you finished?
In Selma right now, you can go to the coffee shop, which is across from the city hall, not in front of it, on the side. There's a map that Sister Jackie put up in there. On that map, if you look at it right now, you would be surprised, the European people that done in the Selma. You would be surprised how many just came here from Africa. Man, the people from Europe came here, man, to Selma. You ought to see it. They got, you know, pins with the color. Man, you ought to see it. Man, people from Europe being here. I mean, from every country from Europe done been to Selma.
To visit?
Very few from Africa. Very few.
So you mean to visit?
And that's painful, Mr. Dockery. That is very painful. And like I said, when we have European people in this country, you see what I'm saying? It is sad, like I said. It's real sad, Mr. Dockery. You know what I'm saying? And then you got police here just shooting us down like dogs. Like dogs. Like we ain't even human. And it's real sad. Not just the economics they cut us out of. It's sad, Mr. Dockery. It is real sad. The congressional districts that done been taken away from us. Come on now.
Well,
then you flood the community with drugs. And listen to this, Mr. Dockery. Going to see Kayla, I was walking downtown because I couldn't get the bus. Guess what I saw downtown, Montgomery?
What's that?
A British flag. When I walked downtown Nashville, guess what I done saw? A British flag. Right downtown here in Selma, a British flag.
Okay.
I don't think that we're getting it.
Well, now, so, okay, big brother. All right. If you pinch yourself, you'll realize you're alive. Okay? So the question is, you know, for every individual, I'm not just talking about you personally, but every individual who find themselves, gentlemen, in a certain position or predicament, situation, right, and they're living in that, what can they do to change those conditions? Anybody? I mean, the first thing they would do, I mean, what do you think?
Mr. Doctor, if we was rich, can I tell you something? When I first saw, the crescent and the moon was at the Nation of Islam, when I first saw it flying on a flagpole. But what really baffled me when I got to 43rd and Calumet, down at where Brother Bonzio was, and I saw that crescent in another direction on a white background with a red crescent, it baffled me. And you know what? I came back to Tennessee, just like you said, you came from Chicago. I came back to Tennessee wondering about that. And I was with Judy, the Irish girl, because me and her went up there, and it's like I was trying to look for it until my dad came and ran for vice president and was working on the Albert Pike thing that I went back to Chicago and I found it. You know, I had to leave Tennessee because they cut my economics off. And I found it. And I found Brother Bonzeal over there. And you know what, Mr. Dockery, looking at it today, you know, that flagpole ain't up. Matter of fact, the Supreme Grand Sheik came here last week and asked me, what happened to the flagpole? And I said, Anthony Bay and Brother Bonzeal needs to tuck that down. So what would it be like if we had a Moroccan flag and the crescent in the last quarter in every one of our neighborhoods in the United States? What would it be like?
Okay.
What would the powers to be? What would they say?
Interesting. Do me a big favor and explain to people the spiritual concept of the flag and the Moorish science teaching just briefly, in a very brief thing, so that people understand the context of what you're talking about, Mr. Zeta. Will you just take a few seconds and explain
okay.
that?
Some of the marks that was put up on our people during slavery was Negro, Black, and colored.
Okay.
That was put up on us. And we think we identify with those marks.
Mm-hmm.
Or African American. We identify with those marks. So Prophet Noble Drew Ali, whose name was Timothy Drew, caught a merchant ship from this part of the world, went to that part of the world in Africa, and he found our nationality and identity.
Ah.
You know what I'm saying?
Before
and he brought it back and instituted here in the United States.
So, Don, hold on. So you mean he went and discovered our history, our heritage, our culture prior to slavery? Is that what you're saying?
To slavery. And
no, I'm saying, but he found out who we were and where we come from before slavery.
Yeah, prior to slavery. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
When he did that, Mr. Dockery, guess what? The powers of B did not like it. Listen to this, Mr. Dockery. I'm going to tell you and Pastor Wilder. Guess what the brothers did this year? You know, I didn't go to the Million Man March, even though my dad put the ideal of atonement on it. Dr. Arlene Muhammad, one called the Million Man March. I didn't go because I knew about, I was studying about the boys at that time. But what I'm going to say to y'all is, last week, the brother, you remember Brother Lawrence Jackson Bay? You met Lawrence Jackson Bay.
Yeah.
And listen, Lawrence Jackson Bay said they went back to Unity Hall in Chicago where Noble Drew Ali was worshiping down in the basement of Unity Hall. So they went in the basement and they cleaned the floor up and there was a 5-point star on the floor. Guess what they done doing? They done painted over it, Mr. Dockery.
What?
These people in this country, to me, I don't get them. Like I said, they real wicked.
Well,
and listen to this. I'm going to tell both of you brothers something. I want everybody to hear me. I don't care if they hear it over the world. We had Mr. Trump, who claimed to be Republican. We got Mr. Biden. To me, they both the same. One was loud, one's quiet. But to me, both of you snakes.
Okay. Does that sound at all familiar, Pastor Wallace? Well, I mean, here's what's important, gentlemen, and that is that we control our own lives. I remember hearing you say, Pastor Wallace, that when you were doing your thing, you didn't care, you didn't think about who the president or anybody. You were busy doing you. And that's the way we should be in 2021, Pastor. Be so busy doing us that we're not so consumed about all that stuff. What do you think about that, Pastor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's something that I think twice about, because that's the way it was then, and I don't see that, you know, changing no time soon with me. I mean, because it's like it's only fair to believe that, you know, if they already know, you know, and if they already have accepted. But I say, hey, those who were doing that evil intentionally, if either they're going to continue to do it or they're turned, you know. So that's the moral of the story, because it's not like they don't know that the evil that they're doing, if that's what they're doing, that if they're not aware of it, they need to learn. You know, you can be taught some things, you know, if you're willing to learn. But if you're not willing to learn, you know, you're in denial. And denial makes you think that you're not equal when you really are.
Well, I tell you, man, Don, you talked about something that is real. And at the end of the day, Don, we have to live with it, right? Live with it and deal with it. You know what I'm saying?
And listen to this, Mr. Dockery. At the time when my dad came in, y'all hit me hard. We got a pastor down here now at Brown Chapel. To me, he's a joke. He's a joke. My dad, they came in and asked him who did the movement in 65. He said they came in. Some reporters came in Brown Chapel and asked him who's in charge of the movement. And my dad said, I am. So the guy that's over at Brown Chapel, he know nothing about my dad. It's a joke.
Well,
it's all a joke. And you know why it's a joke, Mr. Dockery? Listen to this. There was a young lady when Obama was running. She was at the St. James working in there, and she knew my dad, and she saw Frederick Douglass IV and my dad play chess. Well, she lives over here in some apartments now, and she called me. And you know what she done told me? About every pastor in Selma is gay, Caligula. So now, Mr. Dockery, how I feel now, I don't want to go to church on no Sunday. I don't even want to hear the word church.
What?
No. It's Greek. I don't have nothing to do with it. It's like it's stinking to my nose. No, it's all a joke. I don't even want to see none of these guys that's playing like they married, but you don't want to be with a man so you can get a car and a house and look good before the public. It's a joke to me now.
Wow. That's what? How that sound to you, man? That don't sound good to me at all. What are they doing at it?
Yeah, that's his experience, man. If he experienced it, he had that right. You know, it shouldn't be tolerated. It shouldn't be tolerated if he's saying that, and he's acknowledging it, and it gives him a bad taste. So he has that right too, man.
That's his experience, right? I mean,
hey, Mr. Dockery, listen to this. Where is the temple in Selma that represent our people?
We haven't built it.
You know,
church
is a Greek term. That's in Greece. You know what I'm saying? Where is the temple that we had in ancient Abyssinia or ancient Kemet? Where is the temple in our community?
Big brother. If you don't build it, it ain't going to be built. If you don't build it, it won't be built. So if you want it for you and your people, your family, you got to build it. Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Ain't nobody sitting around waiting on somebody else. But I mean, Pastor Waller, what motivation does Pastor Waller have to come and fix a plate that ain't for him? You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, he can't eat it. What's his motivation? Pastor, you fix my plate once. Will you hook me up, Pastor?
Hey, yeah, man. That's the thing that I'm saying, you know, about, you know, the power of the word giving. You know, it still holds good today when you utilize it for the kingdom. Giving is a big part of it. So, yeah. But unfortunately, things are not being done that way with the right motives anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, I tell you. But here's the reality. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Say that again. Say that again.
I didn't say that.
I can't hear you too well, Pastor.
No, I didn't say anything.
Okay, okay, okay. All right. Well, it's still open mic night, and Facebook friends, if you're following us or you're following us on the Block Talk Radio platform, feel free to join us here with your question or comment. 309-44, that's the number to call. Give us a call here and holler at us. We'll be happy to entertain your questions or your comments there. We got a good brother on from Selma, Alabama, Brother Don, and our co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller. He's joining us tonight. We're looking forward to that. Thursday night, we got a special guest, Don. She is a health educator, and she's going to be talking with some of her colleagues about our kidneys. Have you ever thought about that, Don? Have you ever thought
about Mr. Dockery, I was going to say something. My a young grand sheik down here, Matthew Hamilton Neal, hit me on my phone. And he was telling me about some water. And guess what I found out? Yes, some brothers down here got an artesian well and got a water cup. And it's right over in the Tarkova County. And look, and the water's good. You talking about tasty.
Right?
Good. It's good.
Okay. 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 Okay.
They in business too, Mr. Doc. And then, Mr. Doc, I was going to throw this out to you. Shakir Muhammad, who's part of the Nation of Islam, but he's stationed out of Montgomery. He said the same thing you just said, 50 years. See, these politicians here are playing our young folk as a joke. He's younger than me. And he said, 50 years these politicians been down here in the black belt. And you know what he said to me, Mr. Dockery, that really made my eyes pop open? He said, your dad pushed the farm thing real hard, and we don't enhance none of the land down here in the deep south.
A lot of good land down there too, Don. A lot of good land there.
What
you
talking
about? You and I have talked about those state programs that would allow individuals to walk off the street of Selma, Don, that you're talking about, and to use the land, right? They will loan them the land as long as they work it, till it, produce on it, and distribute. They just pay their taxes. You're a business owner, agriculture stuff. So, I suggested to some young cats here in Nashville, and the reception I got was basically, well, man, that's too much like going back to sleep. I'm like, well, hey, bro, what you doing right now? What else you got?
Enslaved to drugs, gang banging, and don't knowing who you are, just hanging out, getting high, drinking, playing games all the time. That's slavery. And that's what these young folk like to do. And, Mr. Doctor, I'm glad you brought it up. The state rep here was a Muslim by the name of Yusuf Salam. And when I first met Yusuf, I thought he was really about it. But guess what, Mr. Doctor? He was helping the Europeans to keep the land.
What?
I caught him.
Oh, no.
Got a European. He don't even know this. I done found out who his European girlfriend is.
What?
And I'm walking down Broad. She sees me and run into the child advocacy. Child advocacy? Is that what you said?
Advocacy, yes.
Program?
Child advocacy.
child.
Yeah, she was used to be in front of in the Miller Brawl, but she's down below Bank Trust now. She saw me and ran in there like I was a ghost or something. So I didn't know what she did. So I walked back and started looking at the child advocacy place, and next to it is Alabama Land Credit.
Okay.
So, Mr. Youssef Salaam and these so-called leaders that we got, you remember you brought it up that they never came and explained the programs to their people? No, they too busy lining their pockets.
What? That happened?
So you did, yep, you own it, Doc.
That happened.
Praying like he's a Muslim with Warf Deen Muhammad and running for state rep. He's got a European girlfriend and helping the good old boys stay on the land. Caught
well.
You, Doc.
You know, I have a tendency, Don, and I hear you a lot when you speak of those things, but I have the tendency to think that despite what the next man is doing, I'm going to be asking myself what I'm going to do for myself first, you know? Yeah, I got to look out for him, but I got to look out for me first. I got to establish myself. I got to be able to fund and maintain the style and quality of life that I choose for myself. And if I'm waiting on somebody else to provide this, man, I might as well. I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. And one of the things that I...
Mr. Dockery, I'm gonna be honest with you. Even though my dad did the Right to Vote movement, I'm going to tell the listening audience, I will never vote in the United States again.
Oh, man. Say what?
No, sir. No, sir. Because you are going to misrepresent my motive and my intent. Like I said, you lying in your pocket. Listen, Mr. Docker, you don't know this. One Jubilee, I'm walking here in Selma. You know the Jubilee comes every year celebrating the thing. I accidentally go to Senator Sanders' law office. I walk in the law office, and I sit down, and Johnny Ford and all of them in Alabama, New South, they know these maps are gerrymandered. I didn't say a word, but sit there and listen. So I will never vote for no Obama, none of them, no, never again. Even though my dad fought for it, I'm going to tell her I won't vote again. Because you're voting in for your interest, your economic well-being.
I hear that. So I take your point. And Pastor Wilder and I somewhat had this conversation because he knows, he kind of saw me interact with people down when I was running for office. Two times a day, and he kind of, you know, he knew some of the people and been around. He's out there working. He's on the ground. You understand? And I had to admit, Don, that there are a lot of reasons that particularly young people are frustrated with the idea of voting because it seems like a game, man. You understand what I'm saying?
It's a joke.
Now,
like 9-1-1 was a joke.
Wait. Back up, man. Back up. However, having said that, big brother, I think let's say it's a game. Pastor Wilder, help me out here. Be my coach here, Pastor Wilder. In any game, they are what, Pastor? Come on, brother Pastor.
Supposed to be rules.
Okay. Pastor, you still there?
You have a referee in a game. You have players. You know, you have scorekeepers. You know, you got a lot of things
there you
that
go.
Comes along with these.
Right. And so how important is it, Pastor, to not only follow the rules, not only know the rules, but play by those rules so you have the best chance of winning that game? Or do we throw that out the window, Brother Pastor?
You know, well, in my book, I talk about the referees and things. So
I know you did. My son loved that. Hey, my son loved that, man. When he read that part of that chapter, he loved that, man.
The referee ought to do the part that he set out to do. He don't tell you the whole thing about all the other penalties and things that comes with it. And that's
right.
For the coach to let you know. You know, the referee just gives you the part that they're calling what they see, you know, and that's the thing about it. And so it's pretty interesting to know that you have rules of the game. And sometimes when the referee – being the one who got the whistle, they can utilize that good or bad. You know, sometimes, you know, according on who they're rooting for, you know, they may call a call that you didn't like. And
Pastor Wallen, was standing out in front of a voting site 2 years ago, and some fella had a whistle, man, and a white towel, and he hollered, "Beep, beep, hold up, there's a flag on the place. Throw the white towel up in the air, man."
Yes, sir, he did, brother. Yeah, man. Yeah, he did. Put it down.
But I said, go ahead. Yes, sir, go ahead. What you say?
Yeah, he put it down very well, too. And, you know, still, they act like they didn't see the flag.
Well, that's the point I'm making, Pastor. Here we are now.
Yeah.
Here we are now, Don. About 60 years removed from the civil rights movement. And a lot of people put a lot of effort in, literally blood, sweat, and tears, right? And about 60 years now, Don, removed from the civil rights movement. The rules and the plays that were made, some folks don't even have a clue about those, Don, and so they don't even stand a chance of benefiting from them. And that's what I'm talking about voting, Don. That's what I'm talking about. We do, before we talk about voter registration, we ought to have voter education. And before
education.
You have voter education, you need to have voter organization. Is that right, Don? See,
yeah, you should have
organized.
Voter registration, voter education, political organization, and political education. And, Mr. Dockery, guess what? When you mentioned the referees, guess what? Listen. I was over at the Raceway. You remember we've been talking over your program, and there were some good old boys. They were sitting around over with my brother that owned Mo owns the Raceway, that part of Raceway over, and he's from Yemen. And he, you know, the FBI agents come over looking for me. So he never did send them over here. But after I done visit Kayla, I'm going to tell all you, they can come see me. I got something to tell them. If any European male come printed with FBI badge, I got something to tell you. Don't come in my door, because I got something to tell you, Doc. What my daughter told me, and that ain't the first time I heard it. And guess what, Mr. Dockery? I done brought it out up down at the bottom of the bridge, and when I bring it up, European males leave. And I know why you leave. So when you come to me talking about you refereeing, your referee game is up with me. Mr. Dockery, I was raised right there in Dixon County. Mr. Dockery, would you listen to me? Right there in Dixon County, I was raised.
Okay.
North of Nashville. And you know what appeased me with all the brothers in the United States? You know what I'm telling you about these European males with these guns and badges on? You raping your own daughter? Don't come to me with no badge no more. Keep walking.
Wow.
I done heard it over and over and over again. You and the Scottish, you gang raping girls? Don't come to me with no badge. Keep walking. My daughter told me she was molested. So they can't come to me no more. Not with no gun and no badge. Yes, that's pitiful. You killing your own.
I got you.
What referee? Only referee we got, Mr. Dockery. God himself.
What? Wait a minute now.
Yes, sir. And matter of fact, at the Morris Conference, we talked about civil rights and divine rights. Guess what my little cousin here right outside of Nashville in Cheatham County Schools about the George Floyd case? All the good old boys in Cheatham County, next to y'all in Davidson County, y'all in the 5th Congressional District. You know what they were discussing out there in Cheatham County Schools? About appealing the police officer that killed George Floyd. They talking about appealing. You know what I said to my cousin, Dwayne, that's out there in the school? I said, I went to the Morris Conference, and they talked about civil rights and divine rights. The guy that they want to appeal, tell him God ain't going to appeal it. Divine rights. You reap what you sow now.
Yeah. Well, so...
You ain't going to get by, Doc. You kill that man, you going to get killed. You reap what you sow. That goes for me.
Don, you're familiar with black
people. That's divine rights.
Right, Don.
See, European males don't think there's a God, Mr. Dockery. That's far removed from their psychology.
I see. Well,
tell them, you go reap what you sow. That goes for me, Mr. Docker. If I do you wrong, I'm going to reap it. Anything I did in the past, I'm going to reap it.
You know what my dad used to tell me all the time? He said, just keep living, and you'll learn. You'll eventually learn. We're joined by St. Louis. It's open mic night, St. Louis. And we got Brother Don out of Selma and Pastor Waller. We've been, in general, speaking about some things, some of what has happened over the last 60 years, some what's going on currently, you know. So welcome. Anything you have on your mind that you'd like to share tonight?
Well, you should be happy you live in the best country in the world.
Uh-oh. Oh, I'm going to get some of them, Doc. And you ain't going to get both.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Mr. Trump going to be got, Doc.
Okay.
He ain't going to get both.
Hold on, Don.
You live in the best country in the world. You know, us boys.
Biggest thieves, biggest murderers in the world is right here. Listen, Obama, one of them. He going to reach the Gaddafi.
Hold on, Don. Let him speak, brother. Let him speak. I'm sorry. Go ahead, St. Louis.
You know, us boys in St. Louis used to come down there to Selma to the joints and pick up them girls on Friday. We used to drive down there in our Boss Hog Cadillacs, convertibles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And them girls would fly, get in their car, and come up to St. Louis and spend the weekend. We'd go out to Chuck Berry's place, and they'd have a good time.
Okay.
Them old boys down Selma didn't have them. The only thing they had was Plymouths. And them girls didn't want to ride no Plymouth compared to a Cadillac.
Oh. Well, I don't know what to say about that one. But you were saying
they come in there Friday night.
Was
girls,
in the girls and the politicians buying prostitutes down here. That's in J.L. Chestnut book.
Hold on one second. Hold
but,
on. Let's
out. No, things. No,
go
you
ahead.
Got a crisis on the border because of this administration. But other than that, things seem to be coming back online. You know that they don't give so much administration money away in the form of stimulus that companies can't get help. The help don't want to come back to work.
What?
Have you heard that too?
Yes. Yes, I've heard conversation about that, you know, it's easier to, I've also heard that there are a lot of people who are taking advantage of new business opportunities or starting in, and even going back to work, so. I hope that it gets back to normal, personally.
But you know what the detrimental thing is going to be? And I'm not saying it's detrimental, but it's just we've seen these changes before. Is artificial intelligence is going to eliminate 40 to 50% of the present jobs today in the next 10, or maybe even shorter. You start seeing and feeling the effects. But within the next, 15 years, I don't know what to say that people are going to be doing where this technology and artificial intelligence is going to take the place of human beings.
St. Louis, I think about Hampshire Rupshaw and the statement he made back in 1830-something, where he said that no matter who's in charge, who's in power in terms of political power, if you just let me control the economics of the nation, I can control the people. And that's a very, very interesting. There was a psychologist, I want to say back in the 70s, Solomon Ash, and he did a lot of study about control, St. Louis, conformity experiments, and how you can get people to conform to what the powers that be wanted, and that was directly connected to economics. And I would tell people, gentlemen, that if you really want to be in control of your own life, establish yourself in the way that you can control your economics. Then don't nobody dictate to you. You see what I mean? And it's interesting you were making reference to stimulus and things that people are looking for from the government. Well, as long as you're getting that, they're going to be controlling how they come, when it come, how much it comes. So But that's just the world we live in. What were we going to say something else?
Well, yeah, I was going to say Rothschild made a statement concerning the money.
Right.
Because...
Right. Well, he was actually talking about controlling society through money.
The position that they was in with the Federal Reserve and with the help of Philander North during the time of Wilson's administration. But you create the Federal Reserve, and, of course, the way the relationship is between it and the U.S. Treasury, really, I don't even know why they use a Federal Reserve, the things that it does, the U.S. Treasury can do. But
It is what it is. But I think there's something to that statement, though, that if you can control an individual's economic resources, that is directly connected to their ability to live the style and quality of life they choose for themselves. I could be wrong, but I tend to agree.
But no,
the stimulus money that went to Selma went back to Walmart.
Hold on. Say what, Don? What'd you say?
All the stimulus money they gave out down here in Selma, my friend said Walmart got it. And we looked over at the Honda dealership. When the car there, and the pastor friend looked at me and said, all they want to do is impress somebody. And broke as I don't know what.
Well.
They bought up all the cars?
They bought up all the cars?
Yeah. When the Honda out there in the lot.
Yeah, he probably closed for the rest of the week.
Gentlemen, I'm going to tell you something. Now, Don, I grew up in an era when they were giving out those Pell Grants and what have you for people to go to college in the late 70s, 80s. And it was interesting how I observed a lot of people got the money, and they had those guaranteed loans, and they never paid. They never gave it to the schools. So my alma mater, Fisk, was one of those that went way back in the 70s and what have you, and they found those people who did not pay off their student loans and what have you, and Fisk had to pay some of it back. This was in, I guess, the late 90s or so, or mid to late 90s when they were forced to do that. But I said that to say that that's that mentality, Don. Get some free.
So you say
you didn't have to work. Go ahead.
If the student didn't pay the loan back, the school had to pay it to the government. Pay the loan.
That's correct.
Is that still that way today?
Well, I think a lot of that has been changed. And Department of Education, I don't know, look, they just need to stop being so back and forth, if you ask me. When President Obama was there, he changed a lot of that. And then
I'm going to tell you something. The federal government don't give you nothing. Let's put that out there first. If they come up with a program, for instance, like that loan restructuring program, when they had the housing bubble burst and they let people come in and restructure their loan, they took a 30-year mortgage and they carried it out to 50 years.
There you go.
They didn't give you nothing. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you end up paying more. But you pay it more in little chunks, in monthly mortgage payments were less, but you paid them longer.
Well, yeah. Part of the crash in 2008 was because of what President Clinton did with the his plan to put more people in new homes. Well, a lot of people got in those new homes, and they had those bubble loans where you got in for free today. You didn't put nothing down. But 5 years later or so, you had to pay a big amount of money, and people wasn't ready for it. They hadn't budgeted. They hadn't planned for that. And this idea that if you don't have to work for it and it comes for free, that ain't nothing to it. You really got to watch that. I humbly would submit that to anybody. You know what I mean? It's not a good thing.
You know, I was arguing with a guy. And they got this thing saying that if the man was in the household, the woman couldn't get no welfare. Let me tell you how that worked. It was a state-run program. It wasn't federal government. Federal government contributed to state, but state ran the program just like they do with student loans. But here's what happened. This is what happened. After 1960, they opened it up where it could be need-based. From 1930 to 60, it was for disabled and elderly people. Now, need-based. So if you had a woman and she didn't have no husband, say she could get $400 a month. Now, if you had an adult at the household too, the adult was expected to contribute to the household. And based on the formula, if you had two people there, then rather than $400 a month, you would get probably $350. Now, of course, we can see what that does. They're going to lie.
Right.
Because if they tell the truth, they're going to get less than they would if they told the lie. So
well,
they told the boyfriend not to be there.
I hear what you're saying, because I'm thinking about the origin of HUD. Why was HUD, even instituted? You know what I mean? And similar to what you're saying is because they were trying to revamp what Eisenhower did in, 1951, I believe it was part of the housing, so forth and so on, that goes back to the New Deal in the 30s. That was really soldiers who were coming from the World War II, basically, and their widows and orphans.
Especially if they were disabled,
And, so I'm just saying that somehow you get lost in the wash, though, St. Louis, and people lean on that as a permanent crutch, and that's the only thing I would advise anyone not to do. Don't let that get you in a position where you're always looking for it. You understand what I'm saying?
What people is saying, making it sound like there was a written rule. I ain't never seen no written rule.
The way the policies were written, though, St. Louis, is that you went down and qualified. A husband and wife could actually go down there and apply, right, and get some of those housing, get some of the public housing, but they would get much less. They would get much, because like you said, it was expected that the husband will supplement. It was only a supplement.
Yeah, you got two people income. If you got one people,
right,
it would be more. If it's two people, it would be less. It's the same way it is with your comprehensive health clinics. You can go into a comprehensive health clinic, and you can pay anything from some to nothing. Depends on your sliding scale.
Right. And, if you qualify for things like Medicaid, for instance, you're going to have a zero deductible and things of that nature, simply because you got both the state plan in most states and the federal plan. I would like to see us moving forward, gentlemen. Take the hiccups from yesterday, right, and retool the thinking of everybody, not just black folks, but everybody in America, to the point where people understand that there are opportunities to take advantage of. And when you do that, you can build the life you want for yourself. You don't have to depend on nothing or nobody but yourself.
But you know what the problem is?
What's
you
that?
Got some people out here that I call race baiters, and they won't stop these damn lies. And you put that out there, and it's in a person's mind, and they are hesitant to step across that line with all these myths and stuff.
Yeah.
Like they said in St. Louis. They said in St. Louis that blacks don't have access to medical care. And, heck, you can go online and you can identify 37 clinics within the St. Louis area that blacks and anybody else can go to receive medical care. And I tell you what, I went to Peoples when I had a toothache because everything else was closed.
I see.
And you know when your tooth is aching, you go to a doggone mortician if he can help you.
Well, a mechanic can pull it, use a pair of pliers to pull it out.
Absolutely right.
So, and this is kind of relative to something that Brother Don was saying earlier, and that is that you have poor leadership that is not informing people of these resources, right, that are there, and they're there in their name. But what happens is, and Don and I talked about this before, I know that there was a like, I want to say a few years ago, that was about 65-some million dollars that Tennessee had to give back to the U.S. federal government because they didn't use it. Well, that was earmarked for minorities. But guess what they couldn't do, Don? They couldn't get the minorities to come and step up and to meet the qualifications to take advantage of it. This could have helped urban Nashville.
You say $65 million?
$65 million.
Mm-hmm.
That was a shame, man.
Well, they made $510 million available for St. Louis with this thing, with this present administration. Now I'm going to see how they use that. Like you say,
well,
you got it's got a deadline on it. If you don't use it, take it back. And it's got to be used with certain parameters.
Absolutely. And people need to realize that it's like a tree falling in the forest and don't nobody know it. That a tree lies.
Mm-hmm.
And don't nobody
know.
And
you know another thing? You know another thing, too. The federal government does not develop areas. What they do is put up some money to match what a private investor does.
Sure.
Now,
sure.
If a private investor don't see where they can get their return, they are not going to come into no area, it's like in the hood,
right,
and they're not going to develop anything. Because the first thing you got to do, you got to have somebody that's going to pay for whatever it is that they build. And if the income data show that it's not there, they're not going to build it.
That's what Tim Scott, Senator Tim Scott, proposed. It's actually a part of the 17 tax plan, the Opportunity Zone. That principle is based on that. And what it tried to do was to encourage people who were paying capital gains tax, that they'll give you a 7-year reprieve if you invested in those types of things, those types of projects. But to your point, if you don't see where you're going to get a return on your investment, many times
that's
not
right.
Happening.
That's right. I don't care what kind of tax break they give you. It still comes down to the bottom line. If the bottom line don't show that they're going to be able to get their money back and pay see, investors ain't going to wait no 30 years. Investors want their money back right now.
Well, here's the sad part I see, gentlemen, and that is that with this expanse of gentrification, once the people, Pastor Waller, who were there for generations are gone and the new folk are there, they qualify simply because of the geographic location that had been identified as a struggling area. And they take that money, developers and everybody else, they buy your house, your property. They go down there to the hood, get the money, develop it, flip it, sell it, and you can't afford to live there no more, and they don't want to live there.
Well, let me tell you something else they do, too. And they got these housing programs.
Mm-hmm.
See, the houses in North St. Louis, where it was black, it got so tore up, dilapidated, that it wasn't none. So what black started doing is moving to South St. Louis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And white folks was going to move. So what the city did, they came up with a housing program where they called it the first time housing program, where they would give X number of dollars toward the purchase of that house. Where actually, it would help reduce the amount that you're paying, but it also provided cash for the owner to get the heck out of there, which they wanted to do anyway.
And they sold it to developers and what have you.
Well, they sold it to the people that was going to buy it.
Well, okay. All right. Tomato, tomato.
if you wanted to move in what was in that area, and it was South St. Louis, where whites had always lived, whites wanted to move because they didn't want to be around what they perspected was coming. So the city provided a down payment for people that wanted to buy the house, and that down payment went to the homeowner, which allowed them to get, you know, make the thing work so they could get the heck out of there.
Well, I see what you're saying. So, Don, if we wanted to change what's going on down there in Selma, it sounds like what the people, Don, and you said something interesting about not wanting to vote, but that's the only way they can get those folks out of office.
No, Mr. Dodge, no, that's incorrect. No, sir. What I told you, the plaque ain't even up. We voting them. They getting in there. And listen to this. Collins Petway, we voted him in there, but he stole the historical black college fund for Selma University.
Is there
so, no,
else?
I ain't going to vote no more. Why I'm going to vote for a person that's stealing?
Well, not for, no, I'm.
That's all you're doing is stealing?
I hear you. I'm not suggesting you should vote for a charlatan or somebody that's misrepresenting people. Can't you find an honest person to represent the constituents in that district? Is there nobody, son? Is there nobody?
Even need to ask that question. Who won't follow divine principles? You need to ask the question. Because the ones we got now, I just told you. And listen to this, Mr. Dockery, the brother that Seventh-day Adventist that showed me that the Sabbath is on a Saturday, you know he said he went to Selma University to learn marriages class. And you know what he told the lady on the phone that day, the guy that was teaching it? He was a homosexual.
Well, and now, Don, we can't.
And my mouth flew open when he said it. I like, what?
Well, hey, big brother, we can't make folks think and do like we would do. All right? You don't have to deal with them. That's all. And I'm just talking about now, as we were speaking of earlier, political organizations, right? Voter education, right? And proper representation, such that you are in a position then to determine what is the qualification of somebody I want to cast my vote for? Not just as one individual, but as a collective group that has some influence in that particular district, that voting precinct or group.
And then, Mr. Dockery, where do we find the people that really want to organize and do that?
Well, now,
and the generation we got coming up now, Mr. Dockery, guess what? I'm 61. And the young guys that's around now, do you think they really want to sit down and, like you said, commune and do that?
Yeah.
All they want to do is smoke weed and play games.
Well, then that means it ain't going to go nowhere.
But I'm just telling you my experience.
Well, sir, I've got gray hairs trying to do that. And St. Louis, it certainly looked like that, don't it? It looked that way, don't it?
It's what he's saying.
Well,
it ain't going to go nowhere.
It's going to take people. It's going to take people to use what they have to make those things happen, wherever you are across America. And we live in some cities. Go ahead, what do you say, Sam?
I hate to tell you that. I don't think some people exist. I really don't. I think you got about as good. You got about as good as you're going to get. You might get a little better.
Okay. Let me tell you what I think the problem is, St. Louis. What most people are following is the narrative of the mass media. And now that involves social media. And they assume that this is the dominant thought for everybody. No, it's just a handful of people like a rock in a tin can. You shake it up, it'd make a whole lot of noise. You know what, James Brown? I know you don't like James Brown. But something he said that was right,
I
believe. Hold on, St. Louis. I believe he said something right. He said, it's like a dull knife that ain't cutting. They talking loud, ain't saying nothing.
I hear what you say, but you know, to tell the truth, you can read of people trying to solve this problem back in the day there wasn't no television.
Sure, that's true. No, but they were more organized then, though. Let's talk about Fannie Lou Hamer. Huh?
Yeah, but she was fighting for something that never did come into fruition. And I'm going to tell you this, Don. I'm going to tell you this, Reuben, and you're going to laugh. But I think a portion of the black population is cursed, man. They got to be cursed.
I in my book, I wrote that we are cursed because of our disobedience, because we fail to follow the righteousness and the teaching of the Almighty. I believe, that's my belief, that we are cursed. Yes, yes. We don't have to be. And we pass that curse down from one generation to the next because we haven't stopped our foolishness. I said it with all of them.
All of them not, but a large portion of them, I'd say that they curse. What else could it be? You don't try it. Everything, just doing backwards flips and pogo stick dancing.
Malachi 6 chapter told us that until the hearts of fathers were returned to the hearts of children, that the earth was going to be smoked with a curse. And I believe that that is the curse that is plaguing urban America right now. It's disobedience because fathers, I said fathers. What did I say? I said fathers are not the righteous arbiters in the life of children. Collectively speaking now, because I know that there are some people that raise their, that are with their children. I'm one of them. But as a whole, when fathers come back home and take control of the life and the development and the shaping of their children, guess what? They'll grow up to be productive citizens in the world. Now, I see it, Don. I see it.
Well, yeah, you play that because
Doctor, but what happens when you have a son that's rebellious?
Well, Don, I'm gonna tell you what they did in the ancient countries. When you had a son that was rebellious, he went out to the wilderness with the elders. When he came back, he accepted Jesus Christ as his personal savior. When he came back to the coming, that's what you did when you got a son. But I can't do that in America. I go to jail. So I leave that alone, Don. What do you say, Don?
And the reason I'm saying that, Mr. Doctor, my son did something, and my daughter come back and said, she said, Stephen's so hard-headed. She said, and I'm trying to explain to him something, but he wouldn't really listen because his mama done put something in his head. She turned around, looked at me, and said, Dad, can I have his 4 acres? Since he's clowning, I take his 4 acres.
No, I'll leave it for him, Don. You got to love him, Don. You got to put yourself in his shoes, big brother. And that is the fact that he's been through what he's been through. You understand what I'm saying? And just like you've been through what you've been through, nobody can erase that for you. And so as a father, that's what when we used to do fatherhood development, we would talk about that. You got to realize that for whatever reason you were missing from your children's life, fortunately you came back now and you're trying to make amends, right? But the time you were gone, that affected them. They didn't ask for that. They didn't ask to be born. So you have to put yourselves in their shoes for a minute and understand that my absence had an effect on them, good or bad. You see what I'm saying, Don? And so you have to be patient with them.
But
you have to be patient with them.
Mr. Doctor, guess what? What he's fussing about, I would do the same thing.
I guess you
so what is he fussing about? Look, Reverend Bevel wasn't there. I had my granddad and my mom.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm trying to say to you right now. That's why you should be patient.
And guess what? I can't make his mother. You can't make a female do nothing.
No, he's older.
You might want them to do, but you can't make them.
Listen to what I'm saying. He's old enough for you not to even include his mother in the conversation you have with him. Did you say he was 35? Did you say he was 35?
And guess what, Mr. Dockery? Right where I'm talking at right now in this bed. Listen, Mr. Dockery. I looked over at him. I was on the messenger screen, mm-hmm. and I looked at him, and guess what he did? Turned the phone off.
Well, I mean, again, the conversation that you need to have with him does not involve his biological mother right now. That's between you and him. You got to find a creative way to reach him, that's all. And sometimes the best way to do that is for you to say, listen, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. Been there and done that myself. Does that sound like...
I do understand it. I do understand it, because guess what? My biological father wasn't there.
Yes, sir.
He was not there.
There you go. Pastor Waller, does that sound like...
See what I'm saying?
Approach? Yeah, I got you. Let me bring Pastor in. Does that sound reasonable, Pastor Waller, as an approach to that scenario?
It sounds reasonable when you say reasonable in what area again?
To be patient and understanding with young men who are angry, who are volatile, and ready to fight because of what has happened to them, you know? Don't want to listen to nobody.
Patience is necessary. You know, it would be if the person has it, you know, you can't apply it if you don't have it, though. And another thing, you know, when I was just listening and thinking about when you were talking about people that's being cursed,
mm-hmm.
So the word does say is more, they remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. Now,
mm-hmm.
if Jesus said that, and then the wealthy is not doing that, then that indicates that they could be cursed. See, sometimes Jesus wanted to show you that it's not all about the wealth that a person has. It's about the motive. To give to get, that's the motive of not being a cheerful giver, you know, expecting something in return, things like that. I mean, so you got to remember, it's okay. Greed is a part of life. And then you got humble people that's not greedy but have a giving heart, and their motives are right. So you have two types,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The wealth and the one that's not financially wealthy, but their hearts are not in the right place. Sometimes when the wealthy person is taking advantage of those that are not. Now check this out, and this is the beauty of it. The word said it, that it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. And he said, y'all, remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said it is more blessed. Not me. I didn't say it. And,
okay.
You know, he said, y'all, support the weak. And remember, support the weak. And so there's a lot of people that does not have. You know, O.J. said it like this. You know, some people are having more than enough when people are starving.
Mm.
People are living just for a dollar. He said, that's tough. You know what I mean? In other words, he basically knows that's tough. That's what they say, y'all. But he knows that it's got to be a better way. So if the one who have can respect the fact that the word, if they know the word and saying it, they still might not do it because they may not care about what the word says. And I think Don said it earlier, that a lot of them don't care about the word. They don't even believe anything exists. But they believe everything else exists, but not the word, not the word of God. So it's amazing, man. So being patient is a great thing, man, I would say. Back to your question, sometimes, you know, again, in my book I talk about the things I didn't do for my kids growing up because I was captured. But they didn't
right.
love me no less.
Right.
They didn't
right.
love me no less,
right.
you know what I mean? And I could change that, but I can do what I can do now. And they appreciate
right.
that for what I can do now.
Absolutely. And that's what's important, is not living rehashing the negative things in the past, but understanding that today is our opportunity to make those better, right? Every day we live, moving forward. Yeah. So, I think we're going to get somewhere, Don. I think we, St. Louis, I think there's some hope. There's a glimmer of hope. I'm reminded of Job. He said that if a tree cut down at the root and dried up, that there's hope that just a spring of water, it'll sprout again. So I'm inspired by that. There's some hope. There's some hope. It ain't over yet. It ain't over till the fat lady sings, and she's still sitting down. She ain't got the mic nowhere near her. So we ain't going nowhere.
Well, like Trump said, what you got to lose?
Oh,
yeah.
Can I get some air?
Listen, we got about 10 minutes here, and this has been Open Mic. We appreciate everybody for joining us as Thursday night. Thursday night, we're going to have a guest on from Vanderbilt University. He's a health educator, and she's going to be giving us some information about our health. This is a national conversation.
She's not going to be talking about COVID, is she?
No. her primary topic is going to be on kidney health. And that's a major thing that there. And she's going to have some other colleagues from Vanderbilt that will be speaking on kidney. So that's going to be a primary.
You know what?
7 o'clock. What's that?
If you look at numbers and you look at the replenish,
mm-hmm.
blacks have got about another 40 years, and they're going to be gone. You know, groups do go extinct. You know that, don't you?
They can, sure.
What they have.
They can. Okay.
That's what happens.
Okay.
It's the same thing with animals. They get down so low that it's just something that comes on, and the other ones, they just die.
Yeah.
They thought
that was
going to happen with the elephants.
I see what you're saying. I hesitated, St. Louis, because you said black. And I really wanted to, we don't have time to go there today, but I wanted to understand better. When you say black, what I think I understand what you're saying, but more broadly, because everybody don't identify themselves as black.
I'm talking about for more recognition of the word that's used.
Okay. So yeah. Would you apply that to the phrase African-American as it's used today? Because that's actually...
You got some people that's in these dire conditions, that's in these situations. They call themselves African-American, yes. So when you look at if you look at the data, the sickness,
mm-hmm.
the education, mm-hmm. the lack
sure.
of sustainability, and then look at what's coming down the pipe, like I say, artificial intelligence is going to do away with 40-50% of the present jobs. And what we're talking about jobs that we talking about jobs like warehousemen, truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about people that do menial work. So this group that we're talking about, that's where they at.
That's interesting. You said something that struck a nerve. Talking to my son recently. And part of his duty now involves creating certain parts that will be manufactured. So he has to go by extension down to the area where they produce them and to inform
mm-hmm.
and work with the people that have actually fixed them. And it's interesting because there are more and more now companies are looking for people with a certain level of education such that they'll be able to replicate what has been manufactured and what have you. It's a very interesting dynamic there, but it's just an encouragement and a reason for us going into STEM, the engineering, science, and math, and instilling that, particularly in African American communities.
Yeah. Now in those fields, you still need the mechanism to make sure that these people are being treated fairly and being hired.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
So it's one thing for your
qualified. That's all
there you go. Once you get a qualified, you just can't walk away from them.
Right. We got to encourage them to take science and take math. You understand what I'm saying? Seriously, in elementary school.
You need that mechanism to make sure that they treat it fairly. Because, anyway, you don't have about 4 or 5 more minutes, so I'm gonna get off here. We appreciate you.
We'll wrap up there with that. Looks like Pastor Waller is kind of appreciate you, St. Louis. So Don?
Huh?
Still there?
Hmm?
We're gonna go.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you. We're gonna fly across America. We ain't gonna say nothing. We're just gonna observe, Don. And we're gonna write notes about some things that need to change. Huh? You with me, Don?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we ain't going to give this information. We're not going to give this information to people who are supposed to be in charge, be leaders. We're going to give this to the people, to the raw populace, to the people that need it the most. And we'll encourage them to develop themselves to implement strategies that we've observed that need to take place. How does that sound, Don? How does that sound?
It sounds good, Mr. Dockery. It sounds real good. And guess what, Mr. Dockery? I'm going to say this. I see some hope. You know, our people have been so misguided. It's like you said, media and these new, you know, I think they just been misguided. They don't know. You understand what I'm saying? I met a lady today right down the street. And guess what I pointed to her? Her house is right countercorn across Reverend Reese, who invited Dr. King. I pointed up at a window. I said, my dad stayed in the window up her. And then when I showed the picture, she said, oh, she didn't even know. So to say this, Mr. Dockery, our people have been misguided.
Okay. It's hope.
They've been misguided.
I like what we're going to leave on that. We're going to snowball this conversation to Pastor Waller to wrap us up for the night with there is hope. And you know what hope is. Hope is that point beyond what you and I can do in our natural ability and where Olam Elohim takes over and he can do it. So whatever with him is anything is possible. Get it, Pastor. Take it, Pastor. What do you say about it?
Hey, and that's what the Word of God says. You know, I always include the Word of God because that's the only meaningful thing that I know right now since I've been on the other side of what I came from and where I came from and everything. I want to keep that fresh on my mind so I won't deviate because of what I hear others say. Because the power of temptation can lure a person back into something if they don't watch it. That's why the word said watch and pray.
Watch and pray.
Interpretation.
Right.
The Bible said the spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak. So I got to always don't let the flesh take over. Sometimes you can listen so long to people say things and disregard the power of God, exclude him from the equation, and then all of a sudden one back in the swing and wonder how they got there. So I like to keep the Word of God fresh. The Word of God said, according to Luke chapter 1, verse 37, said, for with God, nothing shall be impossible.
Nothing.
You know, in other words, he can change changeable things. See, a person that don't have the power to accept that God exists, that's changeable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I yield back to you on that note. Oh, what a difference
that made. Ain't nothing else to say about that. That's good news right there, big brother. That's real good news. All right, well, I hope y'all will join us Thursday at 7 o'clock for our guest, Miss Lenice Campbell, and our colleagues, as they will talk about a very, very, very important thing, and that's our health, specifically our kidney health. On behalf of our co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller, and our good friend out of Selma, Alabama, and others who followed us, we thank you, and we'll see you Thursday for another episode of Talk.